In this episode of Keeb FM, I spoke to Ferris about his experience wrestling with Core DNS when he was working at a very large telecommunications company. Scaling the Kubernetes control plane is crucial for managing large clusters. In addition, optimizing Core DNS is essential for efficient DNS resolution and preventing incidents. Upgrading EKS clusters is also very important to stay up to date with the latest features and support. And of course, in all of this, we can't forget the critical element of good communications in teams, keeping a cool head when things go wrong, because they will, and trying to establish a blameless culture. A healthy Core DNS service is critical to the performance of your Kubernetes applications. This episode is sponsored by Datadog, which provides a single platform for monitoring Core DNS alongside the latest and greatest in the rest of your stack, whether it's your applications, cloud services, or infrastructure that powers it all. Check out the link that you'll find in the description below. All right, Ferris, real quick, which three emerging Kubernetes tools are catching your attention?
Yeah, the very first thing is actually I am thinking about, Carpenter with a K. And it's actually, a scheduler which helps schedule pods of different sizes to, the different sized nodes, actually. So that's one thing I'd be, looking for. And the second thing is Cluster API. So that's like, emerging thing which helps deploy a lot of other, things like even VMs. You can, envision it as, a platform, and you can deploy. You can put a lot of thing, into that. Like it's actually emerging, and a lot of use cases are emerging with that. And the third thing is, I'd be thinking about using Cilium. Actually, I haven't tried yet, but that eliminates a lot of stuff, Core DNS issues, what we are going to talk about later today. So a lot of things are, getting drastically changed after eBPF. Yeah, these are the things I'd be thinking.
Just to get a little bit of background information about you, can you tell us more about who you are, what you do, where you work?
My career started as a WebSphere support, person. So I have worked there for around 2 years, and then I have moved on to building stuff like servers. Like we started, building infrastructure and providing that to, enterprise customers. And later I moved on to, Kubernetes. That's when, the Kubernetes native and all those things, cloud native stuff started emerging. So basically we were, migrating a middleware shop to, cloud native shop. It's like, from the scratch, we were building up Kubernetes, the hard way. We didn't had EKS, AKS, all those things, on those days. So we were building things in bare metal. And I later moved on to a project where we were, building the observability. So mostly, it's metrics and logging. So most of the Kubernetes clusters comes with, Prometheus and Fluentd, Logstash, and, it's all a small thing for some, some small clusters, but when it grows at scale, then that becomes a big problem. So we were working on that for last, two and a half years. Yeah. So basically I am, a middleware engineer turned into DevOps, and right now observability. And yeah, this is about me.
And the Kubernetes ecosystem, moves very quickly. Mm. How do you stay up to date with all the changes that are going on? What works best for you? Blogs, videos, podcasts? What's best?
It's actually a mix of everything. Like I used to follow, a lot of people in LinkedIn, who share amazing contents, like Learn Creators and Mutha Nagamsi and a lot of people, actually. So if something piques my curiosity, I'll just go and check them out. If that article is good, then I'll go dig it up in YouTube and go and look for any videos or keynote speeches. And yeah, so that's the thing. Like we just go and explore stuff, and we'll keep ourselves ahead of curve. Yeah,
fantastic. And Ferris, if you could go back in time and give your younger self one piece of career advice, one tip, what would it be?
I'd ask myself to, learn coding, even before, I did right now. I just started coding after, 5 years of my career. And if I thought, if I had a chance to meet my younger self, I'd ask him to do it right away, you know, when the career starts. That's actually because of my, you know, the work I was, you know, doing in the first 5 years. Support guys.
Yeah, like you said, it's never too early. I think a lot of people would agree with that.
Yeah.
And all right, so as part of our monthly content discovery, we found an article that you wrote about how default settings for Core DNS is going to fail. And you know about scaling Kubernetes based on your experience that was with a real incident.
Mm-hmm.
So before we discuss the main story, can we just cover some background? What was the setup that you were using on the Kubernetes clusters that you maintained? Can you share that?
Yeah, sure. You know, our Kubernetes cluster is actually a managed one. We were using EKS, which is a managed service from AWS. So we were having like, you know, 900 plus worker nodes, and we had around like 15,000 pods running on it. And actually, we were hosting an observability platform there, which was based on, you know, Victoria Metrics, not just stock Victoria Metrics. It's like a little bit modified version of it. Little minor tweaks were there. So it's like a huge one for us. You know, that's, you know, biggest it could get for us. You know, we were initially running, you know, Thanos for some time, very first 2 years of observability program in our project. So that went up to 500 nodes. You know, Victoria Metrics touched 1,000 nodes, and then we consolidated it and we came back to 900 nodes. Yeah. So that's a, you know, environment we had at the time.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, regarding monitoring observability, Prometheus is probably going to be the name that's on everyone's lips. Yet the setup that you just described uses Victoria Metrics. Do you have any insights that you could share with us on the differences you found between the two? Are there pros and cons for both? What's your take on that?
Yeah, sure. So, you know, if you're starting with, you know, telemetry, like you want to have metrics and you want to, you know, have dashboards, nice dashboards, which tell what's happening out there in your applications, you can start with Prometheus. That's a good place, very good place to start. We can, you know, do it like use your stock Helm, and you would just install Prometheus, Grafana, and everything. And it would be providing, you know, a fantastic dashboards as well, you know, out of the stock. As you, you know, scale, when you are having a scale around like, you know, TBs and, you know, PBs, petabytes, you'd have to, you know, scale your observability platform as well. So actually, it wasn't Victoria Metrics our first choice. We actually went from Prometheus to Thanos, which is actually an extension of Prometheus. And it was, you know, working well for us for some point of time. But our infrastructure was growing so huge, and we had to catch up. And there were some issues we were having with, you know, Thanos getting restarted frequently and not performing well with our scale. So we had to, you know, improvise, and we were evaluating a lot of other things, and Victoria Metrics caught our sight, and we just went on to that. So Victoria Metrics actually, you know, hosts everything in the disk instead of doing it in S3 or somewhere. So that is one consolidation. The other thing is we were having recording rules for Thanos, which is like we would pre-compute all the, you know, heavy metrics, and that would show, you know, faster response times in dashboards. So those things are, you know, having heavy toll on our clusters. So we were actually, you know, when we started migrating to Victoria Metrics, the response times were so much, you know, faster, and also we could reduce our costs as well. So the Victoria Metrics was, you know, storing it in disk, whereas the Thanos was storing it in S3. And it was actually, you know, we were investing some money in Thanos, but it is going to different components in Victoria Metrics. But the actual goal we were intent to solve was to, you know, make our platform stable and, you know, to perform at scale. That's when, you know, we went for Victoria Metrics. So it's like, you know, it's not like Thanos is not performing well. It wasn't performing well for our scale. And, you know, that's when, you know, Cortex, we have evaluated Cortex as well, M3DB. But there was another team that was doing that for us. But this Victoria Metrics came out well for us. And we had to, you know, do a lot of tweakings here and there. And we were initially trying out remote write option there, where we could run an agent and then we could write it to, you know, cloud. So we had all the, you know, a lot of data centers, and we were exporting the data into AWS. And it's like, you know, all the things has to go through, you know, an ELB, and ultimately you have to pay for all the ingress data that gets into your AWS account. So that was, you know, creating huge cost for us, and we had to improvise a little there. And we moved that to AWS, you know, using something different, which may not be, you know, revealed here because of the company. So we just, you know, send the data in, and then we'll start consuming the data, and we'll again push it to Victoria Metrics. Victoria Metrics has, you know, a lot of other components. If you are having a huge infrastructure and you would envision, you know, a huge budget for doing that, then Victoria Metrics might be helpful for you. So if you want to use, you know, a normal, you know, 4-node cluster, and you want to have a stable monitoring system for it, a normal Prometheus and Grafana stack would be enough for you. Thinking about scale, think about Thanos and Victoria Metrics. Yeah, that's the thing I'd say.
Got it. Now, regarding Victoria Metrics, in terms of the alerting, is that provided by Victoria Metrics, or do you and the team use, were you using other products? And how do you usually, you know, set up the alerts on the cluster?
Yeah, so we already have an, you know, alert manager in place when we were using Thanos and Prometheus. So we were just using the same thing, but we have a component called as VM Alert in Victoria Metrics that takes care of alerting. So we have, you know, Prometheus compatible alerts that would be just running against the Victoria Metrics clusters. So it's a different component, but it does the same thing as you have with Prometheus. The same setup for Alert Manager as well. Yeah.
A robust mechanism for observing your cluster can help identify and troubleshoot issues. And I think you probably saw this firsthand when you experienced the incident, which we'll get to in a minute. But can you share what happened on that one fine day?
That was actually, you know, we were like three people in our team on that day, you know, afternoon, and the alert started coming. Like, then there is no data ingestion happening. So since it is like feeding data for a lot of other downstream applications, a lot of people were consuming our APIs as well, along with the dashboards. So we were getting like, you know, a lot of people saying your API is not performing, and it's like we just suddenly went into, you know, that war room mode, and we started checking all the things, and Grafana is down 500, and our API dashboard, we have it in Elk, which monitors all the queries that are being put into VM API. So we were checking that the queries count is actually zero now. So something is happening. So we went there, and we went into the EKS cluster, and we logged in, and we could see, you know, a lot of pods are getting into crash loop backoff. And there are some components that connect to EBS volumes for persisting data in the disk. And there are some components that are connecting to RDS. That's Grafana actually. So that connects to RDS. That is also not working for us. So we also noticed the node numbers. We were talking about 900 plus worker nodes, right? So that was drastically coming down. Like as the time passes by, it was going down like 50 and again 50, again 50. It was just going down and it went around like 500 something, and the pods, you know, most of the pods that get the data inside that cluster, those were like controlled by HPA. You know, those pods numbers were like around 20, you know, usually for each site. So those things were also coming down to, you know, like 3 or 4, and that's alarming. So we were like, something is happening out there, but we couldn't check anything is, nothing is obvious actually. So we thought something is happening with AWS services or something. So that's a usual suspect we have. And we went ahead and we checked with AWS, and it looks like no service outage there. And what happened is we as in, I had two other senior engineers along with me. So we were just splitting among ourselves, and we were checking each one. And the other guy was checking with, the cluster pods, cluster autoscaler pods. So we were having cluster autoscaler in place that adds node as in when needed. So we were checking that. It looks like it wasn't adding anything, but it was reducing the number of nodes. So that actually had some, implications. So ultimately that's happening because of, Metrix server. So it's like it's connected to Metrix server because of, how much memory or something is being used is being calculated by Metrix server. And Metrix server, again, depends on the data from, the actual usage and CPU memory and everything. So it's like, domino effect, and we are getting reduced number of worker nodes, and also the pods are reducing. And something is happening. We couldn't go and do anything on that. We tried adding more nodes manually, but even that was going down. So we were just checking all the other avenues. So we went to AWS as well, asked them to, create a new node group, since we are not able to because of recently expired support for that particular case version. So what happened is they also said we couldn't help on this particular case. And we actually, went ahead and, made that node group as, unscalable. How to say that? Like, that's like pegged at a particular number of nodes. And we started troubleshooting the rest of the things. And also for RDS, we were checking whether we are able to connect to it on the first place. We were able to connect to it from outside of the EKS. So it's like RDS is working, but not from this EKS. So another one of the colleagues were checking on the EBS, and it looks like the EBS is not connectable. It's not reachable. So it sounds like it is actually a connectivity problem on the first place, but it didn't strike to us. But we finally found out it was because of CoreDNS. It was just fluke. We found out it was because of CoreDNS, and we saw it was going into crash loop, and it had multiple restart count. It was increasing. So we just had two CoreDNS pods that was running in kube system that comes along with the default add-ons when you install a EKS. So we checked the logs, and we found out it was getting overwhelmed with all the requests that is coming in. So we thought of initially increasing the memory and CPU for it. But what happened is, we thought about increasing it. You can increase it, like edit and do it, but it will again go and remove the connectivity between the pods. So that will be again, losing all the connectivity. So we thought we'll just increase one more pod. That would be, helpful for, without disrupting other pods. It will be just increasing the count of the replica, so you will be having more connections to serve. So that is there. And so we initially increased it to 3. The services started working fine, but again it started deteriorating the connectivity between the pods and the connectivity to RDS and volume storage volumes. Those things are also having impact. So we went ahead and increased it to 3. Went ahead and increased it to 5 instead of 3, and that started speeding up the recovery of the cluster. So basically, we had more bandwidth to serve the connectivity among the pods and also to outside the pods. And that started, recovering the whole system.
One thing, Ferris, just to, for our guests that are out there, people listening to this, can imagine that this is a pretty stressful situation to be in.
Yeah.
In terms of, the panic and even chaos, that's going on at this point, which, a certain amount of stress can help us focus, but after a certain point, it just becomes overwhelming. What was your state of mind and thought process, both yours as an individual, but also with your team? What was that like, and how did you manage to get through all this?
Yeah. So our team is actually a pretty cool one, to be frank. And we were just, splitting the, responsibility among ourselves. You go and check this out, you go and check this out. And we split among ourselves and we were just checking stuff. Our director, he is a cool guy. And he said, I'll be on the call. I'll be there to support you. You just get the system up. So that was, freedom he has given me. I have been on other situations where they'll be put you on a gunpoint and they'll ask you to fix it right away. And that itself, brings a lot of stress and, you can't focus. The normal commands you would run, even that will get all the typos and it backfires all the time. So, handling things cooler, makes the recovery faster. That's what I'd say.
With that being said, having this cool team of very sharp individuals that handle this, what was the eventual fix? What was the solution that you agreed on? How did that come about?
The initial fix of this particular issue is increasing the code DNS pods. So that is a stopgap solution right away. We could do that. And the idea basically is to think about when you are going to this scale, 1,000 plus nodes, you have to start thinking about the cluster components as well. Even though EKS is a managed one, we should start thinking about how our control plane stuff like core DNS, metric servers, and all those things are scaling. You should have a tab on that. And, basically having a HPA would help for you. These are the things very basic stuff you would do, increasing the cluster, increasing the replicas of core DNS pods with respect to your cluster size. And also having a HPA with respect to, how your cluster is growing. These are the things you would just do, as a, stopgap things. But when you are going for, proper, solution, you can go think about cluster proportional autoscaler, node local DNS cache. So there are other solutions out there. So there is a good article about how to, tune your core DNS in a core DNS GitHub page. Go and read that, and that will be a lot helpful for you. There are a lot of images out of core DNS they provide with respect to your queries per second. There are a lot of tuning, the proper tuned. Actually, it was tuned for your queries per second. And there are different images out there from Core DNS that would help you choose one among what is, correct fix, one for you. So there are a lot of solutions in the, community. You can, go and utilize that. And also, what I had mentioned is, most people these days are running, managed service for Kubernetes. That's easier to do when you are at, good scale, 100 or 200. When you are going beyond a scale, for example, 1,000 plus nodes, you should start thinking about how to optimize your Kubernetes control plane stuff as well, even though it's a managed one. And that's a thing you have to keep in mind.
So, it seems that, DNS is a common source of problems for a lot of folks. But in terms of this particular case, what did you and your team take away from this? What were the lessons?
Yeah. So the very first thing is we should start thinking about scaling the Kubernetes as well, on the control plane side. So the thing we had also is, we were using EKS cluster that was recently went out of support. So that played a major role when we went for AWS support, and they said like we couldn't help on this case because, you know, it just went out of support. So that's the second thing we were thinking. So we should keep on, you know, updating our clusters so often. And that should be the priority on the next quarter. So that's the thing. And the third one is like, so we had a HPA and alerting for all the other components that are running in control plane. So whenever something goes wrong with the control plane, we just go and check. Usually we never bothered about control plane stuff so far when we were running it for last 3.5 years. So, and that's the thing, key takeaways we were thinking on that.
It's interesting that, you know, you mentioned the fact of upgrading the EKS, In one of our previous episodes on the podcast, we interviewed a guy named Matt Duggan, and he talked about Kubernetes LTS and upgrades. He said that a lot of teams don't have the skills that are necessary, or sometimes they don't have the time that's necessary to keep up with Kubernetes updates and are sometimes afraid to break stuff. What did deter you and your team from upgrading your EKS cluster?
We were, you know, migrating a lot of stuff from one version of Victoria Metrics to the other version. So we were having a parallel cluster built up, and we were in the process of switching that to, you know, in a month's time, we were about to switch to that EKS cluster. Like you said, you know, it's a huge effort to migrate from one Kubernetes versions to other. So that's actually, you know, easier handled when you are switching from one cluster to other cluster. You build another one ready and you switch the things and done. But that's not in your not in your option when you have budget in mind. So you'd be, you know, doubling up your cost for, you know, if you're keeping that cluster around for like 1 week, that doubles your cost. So that will be coming in thousands of dollars or hundreds of thousands of dollars. I don't know. It depends on your scale. So we had a, you know, privilege of having cluster that is built beforehand because of versions upgrade for the application that was running in, you know, Kubernetes. So we were able to run that and we were able to test it and we just switched things. So it's like, you know, a good thing to do without, if you want to go without any issues, you can just go ahead and create a parallel cluster and divert the traffic and you're done. But if you're going to do, you know, proper upgrade, like you said, that's a huge effort. And it like requires, you know, a lot of effort. And that effort can be spent on other stuff. That's what I'd say.
Now, are there any other tips or recommendations about core DNS scaling that you'd like to share with our audience?
Core DNS, like I have said before, it's actually coming up as a, you know, coming as a, you know, add-on with EKS clusters. So it comes with a default setting of like 200 MB or something, and you know, a little CPU, and just runs two replicas as a default. So you can, with your, you know, querying per second calculated in mind, you can go ahead and, you know, increase the number of replicas for yourself, or you can go ahead and add a HPA if you want it to be, you know, automated. And also, you can think about using different images of Core DNS, which has, you know, defined settings, tunings in place for, you know, given number of queries per second. You can think about that. And also, having a cluster proportional autoscaler is recommended when you have, you know, a huge scale. Better go for cluster proportional autoscaler. That helps you a lot, and it on behalf of you, it just adds one more Core DNS pod for n number of worker nodes that is running, or n number of CPUs that are getting added. So that helps you a lot. And you can also have a, you know, node local cache, DNS cache in place. So these are the things you can think. And also, I've been reading like, you know, Cilium also, you know, helps a lot in this case, but I haven't tried it myself.
Thinking about your journey, you know, you did mention the fact of having a good team about staying calm, but any recommendations that you would give to others that are out there about, you know, how to not freak out, how to not panic, how to focus on the important things? Because I think that's valuable, whether it's for a problem with DNS or lots of other situations in life that might be stressful. What recommendations or strategies would you recommend? Would you share?
Yeah. So do not panic anyway. So we all tend to, but we have to, you know, start understanding the situation, and we'll just have to, you know, start focusing on the solution. You know, just write it down. That's what I do. Like the first two things I just focus on. So get a ticket raised, go and check this stuff, and it just take, you know, a few seconds for you, write it down, and then just go ahead and tick them out, or else you'll be just losing track of things. And if you have, you know, good teammates around, and delegate tasks to them, and they'll help you out with all the stuff. And also you can just be on a, you know, blameless, if you are fortunate to have a blameless postmortem and a blameless team, then you know, that would help you a lot. But I like to see more of such teams. You know, that helps a lot to get things faster in those kind of situations. Yeah.
And what was the reaction from the community to your story? What did people say?
The thought I was, you know, having while writing this is, it's just, I had a lot of things in my mind. I just want to write it out and just wrote it on one day. And I was just, you know, doing corrections here and there and putting things. And we just published, and in a day or two, people started noticing it. And a guy called me and he asked, like, how was your, you know, cluster, you know, going, and how you were debugging stuff, and a lot of things, a lot of conversations got started. And I have met a lot of people after that. And it's like, the one guy was telling me, like, we don't often see this much of a big issue often at this scale. So that was eye-opening for me. It's like, we have seen a lot of different, you know, issues, but I just didn't have time to, you know, share it with people. So I thought maybe sharing a lot would be, you know, would be helpful for others to learn, and we can learn from each other. So that's the thing that came to my mind. And I am really humbled after all the response I have got. Yeah. Thanks for, you know, everything.
That's great. And we've noticed that you're quite a prolific writer. What drives you? It's a lot of work.
Thanks for that first. And actually, it's like, I tend to forget things sometimes. So I just started writing few things because, you know, I'd come and revisit and I'd get refreshed. It's like a scribble notebook for me. I just started doing it in Medium, and I thought on the sidelines, it started to be, you know, useful for other people. So that motivated me to, you know, write more and share some more stuff that would be helpful for people. So it's like, I started, you know, I thought it would be helpful for me to write. And as a byproduct, it started helpful for other people. So it's something like that. Yeah.
It's a win-win. It's great.
Yeah.
What's next for you?
A lot of learnings are coming in. I am, you know, learning a lot of other stuff, Terraform, TerraGrunt, and, you know, cloud orchestrations and stuff. Yeah, I'll be keep writing, and I'll keep sharing things.
And what's the best way for people to get in touch with you?
Yeah, you can, you know, get in touch with me in LinkedIn. And there is my mail ID as well over there in that. And you can anyway reach out to that.
Fantastic. Well, Faris, thank you very much for your time, for sharing your story, for your calmness in approaching a situation that seemed quite stressful. And look forward to reading about the things that you'll be sharing with the greater community in the future.
Thank you. Thanks a lot.